Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to a special edition of the Supertone Show.
I've been around now for a very long time. Many more years, well, I survived. I need you, baby. I need you so. Please don't you ever. You're on my mind, I tell ya. You're on my mind, I tell ya. You're on my mind, oh yeah. You're on my mind. I'm no good without you. In my home, now think about you both night and day. I'm rather glad you came my way. I'm no good without you. I can't do without you.
The Birds, and You're On My Mind, and that was released as a single on 7-inch vinyl on the 20th of November 1964 on the Decca record label.
Now, this is The Birds, not
yes.
The Birds.
B-I-R-D-S.
Indeed, all
tweet,
the confusion,
tweet.
Because they had to pack in, basically, because when The Birds, the American Birds, released, was it Hey Tambourine Man?
Yeah, Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah, they had to stop. And desist, cease and desist. But we're not going to talk about the birds today. We're going to talk about something far more interesting. We're going to talk about the guitar player who was in the band at the time, right? And it's a guy called Ronnie Wood.
Ronnie Wood, known to his friends as Woody.
Yeah, and he's one of my favourite rhythm guitar players of all time. Well, he's a favourite guitar player, actually, in a lot of ways. I love his sound. I love his groove. He's absolutely fantastic. And what we're trying to do in these specials is do something a little bit different. Last week we did Justin Haywood, did we not?
We did.
The week before we did Jeff Beck, which is pretty standard. But this is slightly different. But anyway, going back to the birds, talk to me about the birds. Because on Wikipedia, it says there's a ticket there. And it's something that says from... where is it? The Birds, London's greatest R&B group at the Ealing Club. So talk to me about the Birds.
Well, Ron Wood. I'm going to start from the beginning, actually, because I like this.
Okay.
Ronald David Wood. I've got an uncle Ron, by the way. It's a great name.
Ron.
He was born on the 1st of June, 1947, in Hillingdon, London.
Blimey.
And this is great. He descended from a long line of travelling barge people. And the Woods and the Dyers, which is his mum's maiden name, you can trace them back to the 18th century. On the waters, they were carrying like timber or salt. And they were the first to go and live on the land, really, from their families. And they had a little council house with a lively, musical and artistic West London family. And what I love about this, right, his dad was in... he played harmonica and he was in a harmonica orchestra.
No.
Brilliant. I just think that was great. And he had two older brothers who were 10 years older than him called Ted and Art. Now, this is great, right? Because when Ron was 12, Art used to take him to the Railway Hotel because he used to play in the Corner Davis Band.
Oh, right.
You see?
Alexis Corner.
Yes, Alexis Corner. So his brother played with Alexis Corner. And, of course, that's when he bumped into a young Charlie Watts and Nicky Hopkins, who went on to join the Jeff Beck Group and, of course, has been with him for a long time in an act. So that there's this amazing family history already. But he started playing guitar at 8 and he borrowed a friend of his was going off to the army. Well, he knew this young lad, and so he gave him his guitar for 2 years. And then, his guitar for 2 years, and then when he came back, he got the guitar back, and he didn't have a guitar for 2 years. And then his brothers chipped in and bought him a bashed up acoustic for a fiver.
Is that right?
Yeah. So anyway, so they decided going back. I wanted to talk about that because that's a lovely setting for Ronnie Wood, or Woody, as we'll call him, yeah, in the show. So he basically formed a band with his mates, as you do. In 1964, when he was 17, and he dropped out of Ealing Art College to focus on the band. Now, who else went to Ealing Art College but Freddie Mercury and Pete Townshend?
No.
Yeah.
They all went to art. We talk about this a lot. They all went to art college, didn't they?
And this is the thing, is that every time I read it, I kind of go, oh. So, yeah, they built up a serious following. And they played a lot at their local community centre in Ewsley in West London. And they originally.
Is that Muesli?
No, Ewsley.
Oh, right, okay. I thought it was Muesli. That's not very unusual, yeah.
You're a banana head.
Okay. Exactly.
This is weird, right? So there is something about this name thing. And it was quite interesting that you said it almost straight away is the thing that you remember about the Birds. They originally called the Thunderbirds. They had to change their name from the Thunderbirds because Chris Farlow's backing band at the time was called the Thunderbirds. So they had to change their name to the Birds. They shortened it. And then when the Birds, which is BYRDS, came over and had that big hit and started touring with Mr. Tambourine Man in 1965, they'd released a single, Leaving Here, and it literally went nowhere, if the record shops even ordered it. So and then they had lawsuits and everything, and it was just one of those things. But what was fantastic, though, is, they were playing. And they also, I think they went on a talent competition and they were on TV and they won a talent competition and got a TV spot, and that's how they got signed.
Well, Ron Wood then went on to join The Creation, didn't he? Which, of course, we played a couple of tracks, and I suppose one of the best guitar players, unknown, and we can't do a show about him because we don't know an awful lot about him.
Yeah.
He's a guy called Eddie Phillips, and apparently he was amazing. Jimmy Page learnt a lot off him, all these people, and he was hanging around at that same time. But he formed The Creation and he went on his own path, but sort of went into a little bit of obscurity, really.
Well, this is, I'll tell you what, these characters, and they're all mates, and this is what I love about the music scene, it's not just about, this is a proper music scene with friends hanging out and getting to know each other properly.
time you call. You're driving my poor heart crazy. Let me love you, baby. Love you, baby. Early in the morning time. Later in the evening. Let me love you, baby. You're driving my poor heart.
Jeff Beck, Let Me Love You, from his debut album Truth, or is it the Lemon Song by Led Zeppelin?
Uh-huh.
Because that bass is very similar to John Paul Jones's line in there, if you listen to it. But on bass this time is Ronnie Wood.
I know.
And Led Zepp 2 was quite a bit after this. So did John Paul nick Ron's lines. Well, what do you think about that? Because John Paul Jones was on the album.
That's right, he played on Beck's Bolero.
He did, and so did Jimmy Page.
Yeah, and Keith Moo.
And Muno.
Yeah.
So there you go. What do you think about that? You know, he's gone from guitar to bass very eloquently, I think. I think he did a good job there, because it's very busy, as you'd expect a guitar player to do. But it was very much the thing at that time, wasn't it? You know, with Cream, Jack Bruce, and of course, you know, later on, John Paul Jones. And we played a track from this album on the Jeff Beck Show a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
And that was Shapes Things. And, you know, produced by Mickey Most and recorded by Ken Scott at a variety of studios, Dealer Lane Studios, Olympic, Abbey Road, I think. You know, so it was, you know, a marvellous record. But they didn't like panning things in those days, did they? On the right-hand side is the searing...
Did you notice that straight away? It was like the track started and suddenly on the right, I had to ask you to turn the cans down. It was like...
There we are. Searing fuzz guitar. Jeff Beck. And the vocals were somewhere in the middle. Swamped in reverb nicely, you know, loads of reverb coming through on that channel as well. But it's, yeah, great, you know, great sound. But that, I think, is one of the closest ones to Led Zeppelin that I can actually think of. And that's kind of why I chose it. I just thought it was like something that was like a bit of a contentious thing, if you know what I mean, yeah?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, he didn't actually choose to play bass on this, would he? What happened was that was a guy called Dave Ambrose who was playing with Brian Auger at the time.
Ah.
He was playing with them and then he just stopped turning up. And there was one rehearsal and it was like, and they were going, what are we going to do? And then Woody offered to play and then... It carried on for a bit. This guy wasn't turning up and he just said, look, you know, would you mind just playing bass in the band? And I think he felt more comfortable that with the interviews that I've read. He was he didn't enjoy playing guitar, second guitar with Jeff Beck as much. But the bass was great. And what I love, right, and this is made me happy, so happy, right, because he said that playing bass though, for that 4.5 years with Jeff Beck, he said taught him a lot about playing guitar.
Mm.
And he didn't pick up a 6-string guitar all that time. And I just
is
thought,
that right?
Yeah, he didn't. So he just completely played bass and he had no idea. He was thinking, okay, well, he didn't listen to other bass players, wasn't particularly interested in it. He just played and then he started off with chords. And he thought, oh, no, that's not going to work. And he worked it out for himself just by listening how he wanted to play. So he's got his own kind of unique style with that, I think. And he used to play with a Marshall 100-watt stack and he used to use a pick. Okay, I don't play with a pick, but he used to use wire-wound strings and had a whack the treble up on the guitar and the amp a lot and stuff. And
what, right, so you had round-wound strings rather than flats. Yeah, okay. Because, at that time, a lot of people were using flat-wound.
Exactly.
Really,
that's why they said
It was only Entwistle, really, who started off the round-wound thing in England with that zingy sound, you know. But, of course, very early on, you know, with the Who. But, yeah, I think it's fascinating. And, of course, at this time, he must have got very close to Rod Stewart, you know, because they became lifelong pals. And you know, some of both of their music, the best music that's ever been created. And I can imagine them going out getting rotten drunk.
Oh, they were
before
terrible.
And after these sessions.
Terrible. When you read, I've been reading up on the interviews with them both actually today, because they're kind of intertwined and connected.
Oh, they are.
And they just got on so well.
Well,
it's
even
fantastic.
Their hair at that time as well, because I know Rod was like a blonde, and it, but they had it all spiked up. If you look at a couple of the Faces records, they look virtually exactly the same, you know, and Ron's got a big conk and the big hair. And, you know, but he's a marvellous musician, and I think he's one of these guys that's completely natural.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's more than a sideman. He's because, you know, he's very much a part of the band, you know, later on, of course, we'll talk later on about the Rolling Stones, but, you know, he's very much a part of the band, and he was very much part of the Faces, and he really brought a lot to that whole thing, you know, and he seems like a genuinely nice bloke, doesn't he, you know?
That's what I was just about to say.
He's an artist, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, that struck me a lot, you know. I mean, he seems... people say in interviews as well, you know, don't misunderstand him as being a buffoon. He's actually he has a really good sense of humour, and they're always pranking around, and he sort of will talk to anyone, and he doesn't do that kind of rock star thing, never has done, and that's how he's got to make friends with all these famous people, I think, just because he just goes up and says hello and give, you know, and just treats everyone normally, really, and with the respect, which I like.
Yeah, I bet he's a scream in the pub. I bet Rod is as well, actually, because I think that, you know, Rod, even though, I mean, he's massively wealthy. I mean, he's done incredibly well, Rod Stewart, you know, and he's made piles of money. But he always seems like one of those guys that, you know, on a Sunday, you could go out for a couple of pints with, or about 10, and actually have a good laugh, you know, and Ron Wood, and, you know. Keith Richard always seems a bit starrier than that, you know, but these guys, they're like a pub brawling type of band, aren't they?
Exactly, and I think you can find that later on in the show when we talk about more about their band style with the Faces. But what I love about Ronnie, or Woody, is that he obviously, when Jeff Beck asked him to go and play bass, he didn't have a bass, so he had to go and borrow one from Sound City around the corner, because he couldn't afford to buy a bass, and he borrowed it for 5 years, and the only reason he paid for it is they tracked him down.
We'll be right back.
Stay With Me by Phases from their third album, A Nod's As Good As a Wink to a Blind Horse, released on the 17th of November 1971 on the Warner Brothers label.
Written by Rod Stewart and Ronnie Wood, Woody. So he's made a whole pile of cash out of that badger. And the guitar line must be one of the greatest riffs of rock because it's fantastic in every way. The temperament, the sound, the feel, the timing, it's fantastic. And I've got to say that the more that we listen to other artists, we actually have, we're gravitating more and more to just loving the Faces. It's probably one of our favourite bands, isn't it?
I know, I sat here with a big grin and I was about to say to you, it's one of my favourite albums. I mean, I just love this band.
Yeah, and you know, and later on with Rod Stewart, because you know we listened to Every Picture Tells a Story quite a lot, which was, even though it was Rod Stewart's name on it, it was still the Faces.
Yeah, yeah.
With Ron, you know, and Woody. And this was co-produced by Glyn Johns and engineered by Glyn Johns. And
recorded at Olympic Studios.
Of course, with that beautiful Helios console. And, you know, the thing is about Glyn Johns, when you listen to the other stuff that we do listen to an awful lot of material, don't we? You know, in the house, we listen to vinyl all the time. We do the show every week, so we're constantly listening to music. And what really stands out is the masterful production and engineering on this. That Wurlitzer, you know, because this is just, it's a rock and roll band. Wurlitzer, Hammond, bass, guitar, vocals, drums, and that's it. And it's great. You know, everything's got such urgency and energy. And, you know, the bass is fantastic. You know, Ronnie Lane's great bass player. And he sort of almost took over from what Ronnie Wood was doing in the Jeff Beck group, because he goes a bit mad as well. You very rarely see him below the seventh fret. He's always wittering around up there, but it sort of works.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, and this is one of the definitive rhythm guitar records as far as I'm concerned. And his lead as well, I mean, his lead's great. But I think where the energy comes from, the whole band is, his guitar playing.
Well, what's really interesting as well is, would you believe this, Larry? So when Steve Marriott left the Small Faces to form Humble Pie, would you believe it? It really annoyed Woody and Rod Stewart.
Why?
Because they loved the Small Faces.
No, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what he did is Woody rang. He got hold of Ronnie Lane's phone number, rang him up at the Clear Blue Sky and just said, Ronnie, you don't know me, but my name's Ron as well. And I don't want to see the Small Faces disintegrating and that Marius left. What are you going to do? And Ronnie Lane said, I don't know, mate. Do you fancy coming over and we'll have a little play? Yeah, all right.
And that was it?
Yeah.
Well, you know. Well, the rest is history. But they went on. Somebody said that they were the best pub bar band in the world, you know, because it just sounds like they're absolutely. And they did used to drink a lot. I mean, you know, that was a thing.
They described Woody as Chuck Berry on nitrous oxide.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
he's just pure fun on stage. He wasn't as serious as like Clapton, you know, or Beck. He had fun. He used to have a cigarette hanging out permanently jammed in his jaw, didn't he? He was falling against amps. He was messing around with Rod Stewart and Ronnie Lane at the mic. I mean, they had a great time. They had fun.
And when you see the videos, and there are some great YouTube videos from around about this period, And they're just amazing, because not only can they do it live, but the energy and the performance, but they gave a different show than Led Zeppelin. They gave a different show than the rock god type thing.
Yeah.
Because they weren't. They were just a load of blokes having fun on stage, and they just happened to make a load of money doing it. And they just were hugely popular, because they seem like real people. Like I've said about Rod Stewart before, I think that, you know, they're just really cool guys. You know?
Well, they were like the favourites, the Who. They were their favourite band, and the Rolling Stones and stuff. And before, you know, before Woody joined the Stones, it's just that, I mean, they were all mates anyway, but it was just like amazing. We'll be right back.
Again, the face is Miss Judy's Farm from the same album. Nods gives a wink to a blind horse.
Of course.
Of course. And, you know, in the middle of that, there's that guitar passage. And we've played this on the show before. And I could just listen to that all day because it's so groovy. And live, it's even better. Because what Ron Wood tends to do, he doesn't speed up. He tends to slow down when he's playing. And live, he's done this. And he goes that doot, doot. Do, do, do. And he sort of brings it back,
Then
everybody speeds up after him, you know?
Yeah.
And the bass is great on that, and it Ronnie Lane on it.
I love it. It's just, I was playing it the other day. I was just working it out just to have a look, just to see what he was doing, you know? And it's a beautiful line. And he's a groove, dude. And it's like the elephant, the hippopotamus with the big, you know, euphonium type thing again. Because it's like, he goes, but it's kind of, there's a groove where he just holds back and he grooves him like with a different groove and then he goes back straight again.
Well, what I was saying the other day, when we're listening to it, the bass is swinging. It's got a swing to it, but the drums are dead straight. And it's a really odd thing, and there's like a counterpoint between the two, you know. It's fantastic. But, you know, I'm going to talk about Ronnie Wood, because this is about Ronnie Wood, the show. And I'm going to talk about his guitars.
Okay.
Because during this period, he was using a Dan Armstrong plexiglass guitar for Slide.
Okay.
Which is on my list, incidentally, darling.
Okay.
So, yeah, Christmas presents.
That list that I don't see. But, you know, I have no problem with your list. You can get everything you want.
Yeah, well,
just so you know.
Well, you know something.
You know that anyway.
Are you the perfect woman? Yes, of course you are. But, but also he was using a Zomatis, that one with the, like,
a
engraved stainless steel front, which is beautiful.
That's handmade, isn't it?
That's right. And our mate Dave Swindells did something very similar in the Isle of Man, didn't he? And I've played that guitar his thing. And it's, but Zomatis, they're monstrously expensive. And
do you know why I read a story about why he actually went to Zomatis in the first place.
Go on.
Because he was buying standard guitars and they kept getting nicked.
Is that right?
Yeah, so he ended up going to Zomatis because he basically emblazoned it and personalised it all over the place, so which meant that you couldn't actually nick it. It was very difficult to sell it on because it was his and known as his. So, yeah.
Well, apparently as well, in this time, he was using Ampeg amps.
Yeah.
The stacks like the Stones used to do, you know, the VT-22 combos. I've seen a picture of the VT-22 combo and the V4 guitar amp head and cabinets and stuff. But I believe he used a treble booster as well, and that's how he gets that sound, because the treble booster is much there's a lot of confusion about treble boosters, and I'm sorry for being technically, but they're actually distortion pedals, really. That's what they really are, and they just accentuate the higher mids and stuff, so it gives it, and that's what gives him that crunch, because Ampegs are pretty clean. And he's old Fender amps as well, and he's got a very old Strat that he uses a lot, even now with the Stones. But I just love him because he's sort of very appropriate with his sound. And on, you know, the records we're going to hear later on, he plays acoustic as well.
There's something about Ronnie Wood and the chemistry he brings to this band that made it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Without him. I mean, there's something quite quintessentially unique about him, that when he's in the mix and he's got a great personal relationship as well, it all, and he relaxes, it happens.
It certainly does.
The magic happens.
It certainly does.
But one thing as well, before we play the next track, I didn't realise this, but they say that people forget the Faces were as big, if not even bigger on the road than the Stones for a time. I didn't know that. And they were playing stadiums before the Stones did. And the Americans, actually, they had a load of success in America as well first, because they more than in the UK, but he said they were kind of selling them their own music and they understood it. And that's why they connected.
Well, it was like exporting barroom R&B back to America, you know, because everybody had gone from the British blues thing into this.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, just as good or better.
And it's sad, really, because when you read about the interviews of them, they're so tight, Rod and Woody, and just, you know, and Rod was doing his solo career at the same time with the Faces and stuff, you know, and then when Rod decided to leave, I think that was it then, he left, because, you know, that was it. But anyway, we'll talk about it another time. I celebrate the fact that they did this album, that they were in that band, and they are absolutely cracking hot band.
Story, don't it? Every picture tells a story, don't it? Every
Rod Stewart, and Every Picture Tells a Story, the title track from his third studio album, released on the 28th of May 1971 on the Mercury record label.
So this is Rod on his own.
Well, they say, I mean, basically, for contractual reasons, they couldn't call it a Faces album, but all the Faces played on it.
Yeah, it is a Faces album.
It's a Faces album.
Again. And apparently they produced it, but they didn't. Okay, it sounds like Glyn Johns. Again, so it's a lot of hogwash, I'm afraid. Hogwash, they're trying to the hogwash us. But in the beautiful about that is that that 12-string guitar at the beginning, it just goes to show some dynamics with him, you know, that, yeah. And how he actually, because again, he picks up with that beautiful rhythm in the middle, you know, nobody can do it like that. Even Richards, Keith Richards, I don't think he can do the same thing. Richards is a different sort of style. But in the Stones, of course, they've got two rhythm guitar players. That's what they've got.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Really, you know, yeah. Which is interesting. But
what I do love about that song, but I always giggle, and I remember actually when I was at a party, remember on the Isle of Man after we'd seen Vera Van Heeringen play Andy Seward, and we were at this guy's house and we were like doing, right, play your favourite record.
We were very drunk.
We were, weren't we? Mm. Well, we got made drunk, actually. They kept plying us with alcohol. And I put this on for Vera, and I said, listen to that, listen to the beginning. And we giggled like kids because it's just so funny, because it's so imperfect. It's imperfectly perfect.
Because they fall into the first note, don't they?
It's like, bro, I know we've sort of, I just love it because I just see them, they're like stumbling through the door, like a saloon door with a, you know, bottle of whiskey.
That's what it's like, yeah. Stumbling through, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart, I know I'm losing you from the, again, from Every Picture Tells a Story, released 20th of May 1971, a cover of the Temptations song, produced by Rod Stewart, a.k.a. Glyn Johns, in attendance.
Yeah, yeah,
thing,
yeah.
And recorded at Morden Studios. I think it was a Karak desk in there, if I remember correctly, but anyway.
That song is them falling out of the bar at the end of the night.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's fantastic. Tell. And all the way through that, I mean, Ronnie Lane very rarely goes, I said before, the seventh, he's right up there, that one, the one before that, I think he was, there's hardly any bass in it at all, he's like doing something crazy. Anyway, Ron Wood,
it's alive,
fantastic.
It's an alive, organic song, I love that. And that album, you know, went to number one for 6 weeks in the UK and 4 weeks, a whole blinking month in the US, and that is some achievement.
We play it every week.
I know, we do, don't we?
I love it.
It's our staple go-to, really, we just love it. So, I want to tell you a story as well, because the way that Ronnie Wood, or Woody, has managed to he's like, he's passed like water, and he's just on this incredible journey. So by 1972, he'd earned enough money, and he bought a big house near London, and it was John Mills' old house, you know, the father of Sir John Mills, Hayley Mills, the actress as well. So, and it was 2 miles down the road.
Ice cold in Alex.
Right.
Mm, okay.
So it was... So he lived, Pete Townsend lived 2 miles downriver from him. And at the time, Eric Clapton was just going over a heroin addiction and he hadn't played for a couple of years. And his girlfriend's dad was a guy called Lord Harlech, apparently. Wow. He rang Pete Townsend and said, can you organise a gig? I need to get Eric back playing again. And Pete rang Woody and said, can you help? And Woody says, well, look, you know, I'm doing the house at the moment. Why don't we all rehearse here? And he was building a studio. So they all, but Pete Townsend loved the house. So before you know it, all this gear started going into this house that he just got. And that people were invited down. And then he got to play on stage with Clapton, which I think did them both a hell of a lot of good, really. So they both had this gig. And then he started on his solo album. And then he invited down some guys, like he knew Mick Jagger, and just saying, come down, hang out. And he also invited Keith Richards and said, you know, if you want to, he didn't know Keith really that well at the time. And just said, well, just come, if you want to come down, there was an invitation. And Keith Richards said, well, you know, I've heard that Willie Weeks is on bass and he's doing this solo album. So he went down and he stayed for 3 months.
Well, we've listened to these solo albums and, you know, it's only an hour show. And we'd like to play more of Ron Wood, you know, but it's we didn't really get it as much. And I think this really, in terms of his career, this Faces stuff, and even the early stuff with Jeff Beck and stuff, you know, was that's the quintessential Ronnie Wood.
Sleeping all alone.
The Rolling Stones and Miss You. And that was released as a single in May 1978. That's a long time ago. On Rolling Stones Records. And that was 1 month in advance of their 14th British and 16th American studio album release, Some Girls. And it went to number one in the Billboard Hot 100 charts and number three in the UK.
Well, the reason why I picked this is that the rest of the albums that he's been on with the Stones all stink. And it's the only one. The interplay between the guitar, the two guitars, is great. It's really nice. It's a good tune. It's really good, you know. But I didn't like the Rolling Stones after Brian left, really. Well, Mick Taylor, when he was in, I mean, left, he died, of course, sadly, but left in the most terrible circumstances. But anyway, you know, and I just never got on after that. And Blue and Lonesome, which came out recently, and all the blues people out there say it's fantastic. It's not. It's crap. So I'm afraid. So there we are. So email me, come round and try and beat me up. But it's crap. But getting back to Ronnie Wood, just talk to me about Ronnie Wood and the Rolling Stones.
Well, it was basically when Mick Taylor left the band, Mick Jagger was going, what we're going to do? He didn't know what to do. So he basically asked Ron if he would help him out. And he said, well, look, you know, we don't want to split the faces up. So what he said, no, of course not. They're my priority, because he was still playing with the Faces at the time. So a year later, he ended up standing in and playing in with the Stones. And that's really how he started. But he was juggling. He was touring with the Stones and he was also touring with the Faces at the same time. But one thing had to go. And then obviously when Ronnie Lane left the Faces and then Rod Stewart left, it kind of, Rod knew that actually Woody belonged with the Stones. Yeah. And I think, and he knew that that was his path, really. So I think it came to that kind of a head. But what I love about all this is that they were friends, you know. They weren't just in it for the money. They were actually friends. They hung out. It's like, and ever since that, when he met Keith Richards, they're inseparable. I mean, you read about the times when Woody was...
Well, they've grown to look like each other more and more over the years, actually.
Yeah, they have, haven't they? But they're like, they're each other's foil as well. It's that one leads and the other goes back to vamping and doing the rhythm stuff. And even when he had problems with alcohol abuse, you know, there were times when Keith Richards was like pointing a gun at him or putting a knife to his throat, just saying, stop it.
Get yourself. Right?
Oh, God, yeah. And there were times when like Mick Jagger persuades him to go into rehab. But the main thing is that he's a father of six children. He's got six grandchildren. His twins are three tomorrow on the 30th of May. So that's Alice and Gracie. Happy birthday. He's an artist. He's been in film. Ron Wood. He's just an all-round amazing guy. And he's last of a breed. And he's just a rara avis, which is a very unusual person, unique, and he was born, not made.
Well, that's it. See you next week.